Good morning. All right, good morning. We're going to go ahead and open up the Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for everyone that's here. This is our first meeting for the 2016 regular session. And because of that, we do need to go through organizational meetings. So I will call to order a organizational meeting for the purpose of adopting rules. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move for adoption of the committee rules as presented.
Senator Cruz moves that we adopt the rules that have been presented to us. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Now that we've got the official work done, let's go to the next one. We have a new member.
Yes, we do. Brand new to the legislature and everything.
Someone who has not been in the halls of judiciary before. So, Senator Rosenbaum, why don't you take a moment and just tell us and the listening audience a little bit about yourself and what area you represent? And
sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am Diane Rosenbaum. I'm a senator from District 21, which is inner southeast Portland, a little of northeast Portland, and then Milwaukee and Oak Grove in Clackamas County. I did actually get to attend the previous meeting of the Interim Judiciary Committee, in which I said that it had been a lifelong dream of mine to play a district attorney or a judge on Law and Order, but since that show isn't being filmed anymore, I had always also wanted to be on the Judiciary Committee, so this is the next best thing. I have a strong interest in many of the issues that this committee has dealt with. I've been in the legislature since 1999. I spent 10 years in the House and have been in the Senate since 2009. So I'm very, very pleased to be on this committee. It's very fast-paced, particularly, I know, in the short session. So I have a legislative assistant I just hired who's a young attorney who's helping me keep up to speed on the bills, and committee counsel have been extremely helpful already, so I'm just excited to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet, and thank you very much for being here, and hope the experience is good, and who knows, maybe you can apply for bar credit. All right.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
I tried.
All right, well, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and get into the more formality of our formal part of our agenda for today, a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1571, so I'll call to order the public hearing. And Whitney, you also are a new representative for the committee. So before you give us the little play on the bill itself, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, my name is Whitney Perez, and I'm here for the short session. So it's been a great learning experience so far, and very fast paced, as was mentioned. I have been in public defense for about the last 9 years this summer, and I currently work at the Public Defender of Marion County, and I handle mostly major felonies.
Well, thank you very much for being part of our process and being on loan for we can actually have your expertise. So if you give us the summary on the bill, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. This is Senate Bill 1571. This measure is brought to us today by Senator Gelser. We do not yet have the financial impact statements. This measure addresses a growing concern over the number of untested sexual assault forensic evidence kits in Oregon. Testing these kits could be a valuable tool for prosecuting these crimes as well as identifying possible suspects. Senate Bill 1571 requires the Department of State Police to adopt rules for processing these kits. It exempts from this requirement the testing of anonymous kits. It also requires that by July 1st, 2018, the results of these tests of testing these kits is entered into the combined DNA index system upon completion of the test. It also requires every law enforcement agency to implement procedures for the collection, testing, retention, and destruction of these untested kits. Senate Bill 1571 also includes provisions for law enforcement agencies to communicate with victims. And finally, it creates a task force on the testing of sexual assault forensic evidence kits. This task force will be required to examine procedures related to the testing of the kits, as well as pursue other funding options to offset the costs associated with testing the kits. There is one, a dash one amendment, which was brought to us also by Senator Gelser. This proposed dash one amendment further defines the term victim. It also requires that the policies and procedures that the local law enforcement agencies implement be in writing and available to the public upon request. It also clarifies what information the victim can request from law enforcement and that a response be given within 30 days. Finally, it requires the task force to include a sexual assault advocate in place of a domestic violence advocate and adds additional responsibilities for the task force. Thank you.
Thank you. So what I'm going to do is first call up the first panel we're going to have, which is Brenda Tracy, Mary Bittler, and Tom Bittler. While they're coming forward, Senator Gelser, do you want to give us some opening statements since this is a bill that you were gracious enough to bring forward and allowing all of us to be a participant as co-sponsors?
Yes, thank you, Chair Przanski. And first, I want to acknowledge that many, many people have worked on this bill and the issues that are encompassed in it for quite some time, which is why there are so many people that were eager to support it by putting their names on it as chief sponsors and working on it. Those that have worked the most have been advocates in the community, those who have experienced the real-life impact of the consequences of rape tests. Rape kits going untested, whether that is the trauma of knowing you've been through a traumatic experience and that information is sitting on a shelf gathering dust, or you are a victim whose crime could have been prevented if the kits had been tested and the matches had been made. So I'm very grateful that Mrs. Bittner has allowed us to call this Melissa's Law in honor of Melissa Bittner, and Mrs. Bittner will tell us more about why that's the case. But I think this will move us forward with some great protections for rape victims, and I'll leave it to the panel to explain why and how.
No, go ahead, Brenda.
All right, thank you very much. So I'm going to let you choose who is going to go first. The protocol is that you need to give us your name before you give us the testimony. So who'd like to start?
We've decided that would be me.
All right.
Good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. My name is Brenda Tracy. And last summer, I approached Senator Gelser, and we talked about this issue of our rape kit backlog here in Oregon, and then also just the general issue of victims coming forward to get a rape kit, and how are we going to deal with those rape kits moving forward in our state. She was gracious enough to say that she wanted to be a part of this, and then after that, many people started signing on to this bill and this issue. My own personal story is I was the victim of a gang rape by four men. Two of them were OSU football players. I immediately went to the hospital after my attack, and I had a rape kit done, which I know from experience is a traumatic event in itself. It's very invasive. There's swabbing, there's plucking of pubic hairs, there's recounting everything that's happened to you, there's photos taken of your entire body. It's absolutely everything you don't want to do after you've been attacked and raped. And but for me, the reason I did it is because I wanted to pursue justice, and I knew that in order to pursue criminal justice, I had to have a rape kit done. This was how I was going to ensure that my attackers were held accountable. Through some circumstances not of my own, and I won't go into all the details, my attackers were not convicted criminally. Years later, last year, when I came forward with my story, I found out that my rape kit was not tested and it was destroyed before the statute of limitations was up. And since that time also, since coming forward with my story, we found out that we have over 5,000 kits sitting on shelves across our state that have not been tested, and some of them have been sitting there for decades. And unfortunately, I believe that when we test these kits, we will find kits that probably have DNA hits, victims that may have criminal cases but will be denied justice because of the statute of limitations. And this saddens me and it angers me, because I know what it feels like to be the victim of a crime and to be denied justice, and it's not fair. This bill is important for many reasons, and I'm here with Melissa Bittler's parents today because as myself and Jackie Swanson have been looking at this issue and working with legislators on this bill, Melissa Bittler's case is a worst case scenario of what happens when we don't test rape kits and when we don't take these crimes seriously. And Melissa was just a 14-year-old girl. She was so young. She was taken far too early. And at the time, in 2001, when we found out that we had already had a backlog of kits, 1,000 or so in Portland, there were promises made that these kits would be tested and that we would deal differently. And now it's 2016, and we did not do that. We did not follow through on that promise. We did not implement policies and procedures. And we're even in a bigger mess now than we were then. And to me, that's tragic. And my hope is by naming this bill Melissa's Law that I just want to honor her memory. I think it's important that we don't forget her. And I feel this compelling need to be a voice for her and for all of the other victims who have been denied justice and who will be denied justice as we test these kits. If there are people in our state who are courageous enough to go to the hospital, get this kit done, the least we can do is process this evidence. That's the very least we owe them. And I know that there's been some finger pointing going on, like, you know, the police messed up and you this and victims and whatever, but what I would like to do today is I would like to use the word we, not they and them. I would like to say that we need to address this issue, including myself. I'm an Oregonian. I'm a citizen of this beautiful state. And what are we going to do as a state to address this issue? What are we going to do to make sure that this problem is addressed and that we fix it and that we begin the healing process between victims and the system, the criminal system? So we have the opportunity today to pass Melissa's Law, to move it forward through this committee, to adopt the amendments that have been proposed. It's a great start to begin the healing process for our state. It's a great start to send the message to victims that their cases matter and that we care. But it's a start. And I would hope in the future that we would, next year in the legislative session, talk about actual rights for victims. But this is a good place to start. And I just thank you for allowing me to be here. I thank you for all of your support on this bill. And, like, really, truly, thank you for calling it Melissa's Law. I really, so that's, like, probably one of the most important parts to me about this bill is that we honor her memory. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
It's okay. No, I can go. Good morning, Senators. My name is Mary Bittler, and I appreciate you letting me talk today. This is Melissa. This photo was taken 6 months before her murder. She was a young, vibrant girl with her future ahead of her. Straight A student, loved school, loved pets. And yes, she was my baby. I want all of you to imagine sitting in this chamber right now and someone walks through that door and says, I need to take you away because there's been an incident on your street and we need to talk to all the neighbors to discuss this innocent incident. Being driven to your husband's place of business, sitting in a conference room with two detectives, And then being told when your husband shows up that the body they found in your neighbor's backyard was your daughter. And then to find out months later that LaDawn Stevens had raped three young girls back in 96, and only one of those rape kits had been tested, and two hadn't. The anger that goes through you wondering if those two other rape kits had been tested, would a serial rapist been caught? Would he have been in jail at that time and unable to murder your daughter? And that's why I want this law passed. No mother or father should go through the turmoil of losing their child to a serial rapist, because the state, and I agree with Brenda, it's a great state, but because for some reason we can't find the money, we can't find the manpower to test a rape kit, whether it's from a child, a man, or a woman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair and distinguished senators, my name's Tom Bittler. I'm Melissa Bittler's father. Melissa Bittler, as many of you may have seen in the papers, was a soccer player. Now, Melissa didn't want to play offense. She didn't want the glory. What she wanted to do was defend her goal and her goalie from the other team. And she did this with distinguished competitiveness, fairness, and a determination. But on December 13th, 2001, there was no defense for Melissa, a young, innocent 14-year-old who simply walked across the street to catch a bus. A criminal grabbed her, choked her, dragged her back, and raped her and killed her in her neighbor's backyard. Why, in a refrigerator, in the Portland Police Department evidence, laid 1,000 rape kits unprocessed, some of them for over 4 years, sitting there, nothing done with them. Then we, through the detectives in the case, decided to process some of those. And we came closer to who it was that perpetrated this crime. This person who had raped 11 women when he was a juvenile and attacked three women when he was adult at gunpoint, who served 6 years of a 30-year sentence, was out on the street and raped immediately upon release. And those rape kits sat in the evidence room. It wouldn't be until April 28th of 2002 when he raped another victim, a victim that he knew. And she had to play dead before he would leave, her fingernails buried in the carpet, broken off. Then, because she knew him, we would capture this serial rapist who had so destroyed our neighborhood and who was brazen enough to stay there for years on parole. Why he did these heinous crimes. We were promised by the district attorneys and the police department that this would never happen again, that these rape kits would not sit there in a refrigerator and be unprocessed, that we would do the due diligence that it would take to not let this happen again. to an innocent 14-year-old girl who simply was walking to school. But here we find out later, from the digging of a reporter, that not only is it not happened, but it's worse. It's twice as many unprocessed kits. This is just Portland. This doesn't include the great state of Oregon's other precincts. And here we sit. Melissa died December 13th, 2001. I ask you to look at your calendars and tell me what is today's date. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for anyone on the panel? I want to thank both the Bittlers for coming forward. We know that this is not easy for you to present such tragedy in the public setting. It does mean a lot for us to have individuals such as yourself come forward and give us these experiences that you're living and will continue to live. Thank you again. So I'm going to go ahead and call up the next panel.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our second panel will include Kevin Campbell, Michelle Roland Schwartz, and George Brooke, I guess it is, or Burke.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association to speak in support of the bill this morning. I will cover a few issues that in the bill that we would like consideration to adjust a little bit just to make it a bill that can be implemented in the best way possible, and I'll go over those things specifically. I want to say that the testimony you just heard has a huge impact on our law enforcement leaders. This has been an issue that last session, Senator Cruz and Senator Lori Montes Anderson introduced a bill that asked law enforcement around the state to actually do an inventory to find out how many untested sexual assault kits there were in the state. We came before this committee and requested that you give us permission to work without a bill to do this. We felt like it was something that was important to do, and we wanted to follow through. Subsequent to that, a coalition of stakeholders was formed, chaired by Oregon State Police Superintendent Rich Evans. Brenda and others, both from the victim and survivor community, from the sexual assault victim advocates community, law enforcement, and other groups gathered to take on a few challenges. The first was the inventory. And as you already heard, the statewide inventory, and we had every agency in the state participate in that. That's where we found that, not counting anonymous kits, we were at about 5,000 kits. That is a lot of kits. And we started there because we needed to understand what the challenge and issue is. I will say that Oregon is one of the few states that has taken this on as a statewide challenge. There are a number of states where large cities have done this, and they have found important results by following through. Oregon's done it statewide, so we know we have 5,000 kits. The next thing the coalition took on was protocols. We made the determination that as a policy in the state, law enforcement would support sending every kit for testing to the Oregon State Police. We would do that and would provide on a unique form. As you know, all evidence is submitted using an evidence form. We have now a special form just for sexual assault kits. It gives Oregon State Police the key initial investigatory information necessary for the state police to make sure that cases are prioritized properly and that the test kits are tested. We successfully worked through the protocols and developed them and have already started the process of submitting kits now as a matter of course with that new form that's in place today. Finally, Michelle Roland Schwartz, who's sitting next to me, can talk more specifically about this. We worked through one of the most important parts of this, which is victim notification and care. How are, with the backlog, as new information comes forward, how do we notify in a way that meets victims and survivor needs, a survivor-centered approach? And so a list of protocols were developed for that as well. There's much more work to do, and I'd like to just briefly, Chair, with your permission, talk about a few just of the issues in the bill that we'd love to have you take a look at, if possible, to amend. These are friendly amendments. Our goal is to support this and to make sure that sexual assault kits moving forward are properly handled, tested in a timely way. I'm not going to cover everything in my testimony. Some of these are technical amendments that can be, and we've already communicated to see if we can get those fixed. But I would like to talk just about a couple issues that we want to make sure that you're aware of, with the hopes that we can adjust it or address it a little differently. The first is that the bill requires, as of 2018, the Oregon State Police to enter for all eligible kits. FBI controls the combined index system and how things are entered. So eligible is an important word. It has to fit at certain parameters because they don't want innocent people in the database. But the bill requires by that date, July 1st, 2018, that OSP ensures that eligible kits are entered into CODIS immediately. The challenge is not our desire to have those entered quickly. What we'd like to just indicate is our great concern is that Oregon State Police have the resources necessary to do this work. The CODIS entry process sounds like it's an easy process. Can't you just type in the information? But it's actually a 2+ hour process for each kit. So we want to do this work. OSP is woefully funded in terms of positions, not just in DNA analysis, but the other areas that impact this issue. And we didn't want to create a situation where OSP has to prioritize their overall crime DNA cases based on a deadline if they're not properly funded. We do think that they should be tested or entered into CODIS as soon as possible within available resources, and then we would like to fight for the resources necessary so that these kits are tested quickly, entered into CODIS quickly, so that cases can be resolved more quickly, and we wanted to highlight that concern. We have some minor details. As you know, we feel like policies, in order to work in the state for agencies, have to recognize that we have small agencies with one officer, or we have agencies as big as Portland Police Bureau. And the policies that are adopted in legislation have to be able to be implemented at the local level with best practice in mind. And that's what the attempt of the bill was, is to do that. So as a result, the bill as it's drafted now gives the agency 7 days to pick up the kit from the hospital. The only request I'd have there is that the hospital, as a matter of protocol, notifies the agency. We'd like the 7-day period to be from the time they're notified. In the event that there's some problem with notification, we don't want law enforcement to not be aware of a kit for some reason. It would be an anomaly, frankly, but I just wanted to highlight that. We support the idea of sending the kit to the crime lab within 14 days. That is quick, but it can be done around the state in agencies throughout the state. And that 14-day period would start after the agency picks up the kit from the hospital. The biggest issue that we confronted was retention. The initial request was not as long as we ended up determining would be important. We decided that a 60-year retention of this evidence is important, I think, for a lot of reasons. It takes the issue of destruction out of the picture so that agencies have a very clear line about retention of this evidence. And so Our agencies can support that as well. The one issue that is a challenge for us that we'd like you to consider amending has to do with victim notification. In the bill currently, it asks each agency to identify a single person in the agency who would respond to all inquiries from victims. Our concern is different parts of the state have more or less resources, but a single person actually, we believe, would reduce the responsiveness in many jurisdictions to victims' needs. We're tying it to an individual that works hours. They have vacations, they have sick time. In some cases, there are agencies that have a team that works together with both victim advocates and law enforcement personnel in order to give victims a specialized response. I do think it's important for victims to know how to get information regarding their kit. I'd like you to consider, though, if you can, amending it to give agencies the ability to implement the actual response so that it's not tied to a single person. Finally, this is not a big deal, but as you know, the coalition that's been put together to work on this, I think, has been very effective. The bill does create a task force moving forward. We're concerned it might create a fiscal impact in that event. We think the coalition could do this work, add additional expertise and members, include legislative representation. If the fiscal becomes an issue, that is something that we're committed to move forward and to work diligently on this, and I wanted to point that out. Finally, the Dash 1 amendment is the only amendment I'm aware of at this point. I know there'll be other amendments. If there is a task force, we support the amendment changes to members of the task force. That makes sense. The only other issue I wanted to just identify in the Dash 1 amendments is that there is a requirement in there that an agency make, rightfully so, policies and procedures available at request. But again, it uses the term immediately in there. Immediately for law enforcement agencies is a hard term. Obviously, we want to provide timely response always. That we would like you to consider, if you can, removing the word immediately, if possible, just because as a matter of course, it doesn't have a definition in statute, and that's our only request there. So thank you for giving me a chance to have very lengthy testimony. With that, I'm glad to answer any questions. I do want to say we are absolutely committed to moving forward to continue this work. In honor of people that, frankly, should have had the kind of justice that was not available to them, it's a reason that we continue to work and will continue to work to resolve this. So,
all right. I'm concerned about time management as the number of people we still have here who want to testify. So what I want to do is we're not moving the bill today. We knew that we weren't going to. I think some of this on the technical stuff can be done offline between sure. members with questions. I want to have the panel complete, and then we'll see where we're at, because we have a floor session that's been scheduled today, and so we have a little bit of, let's say, tightness in our schedule today.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry for going so long. Yeah.
So if you can hold off, mm-hmm. Senator Yeltsin, that'd be great. All right, who's going to go next?
Good morning, Senator Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, I'm George Burke. I'm the commander of Detective Division with the Portland Police Bureau. I want to say back in 2014, and I will keep this fairly brief, back in 2014, we started fielding questions from a group, Joyful Heart, asking us about what kind of backlog we had in our sex assault kits. And the entire time we were fielding these questions, we kept looking around saying we don't have a backlog. We have kits that we send to the state crime lab. The state crime lab tests them. We get the results back. It wasn't until we met with some folks from Houston where they said, quit looking at what you think is a backlog, because we're not talking about a backlog. We're talking about untested kits that are sitting in your room, in your evidence custodian room. So we decided that we would take a look and determine what that looked like. And quite frankly, we were shocked when we did the audit to find out how many safe kits we had in our possession. As a result of that, we began discussions with the Oregon State Police about changing protocols on what we were willing to submit, what we wanted to submit, and we really wanted to go to a full submission of all safe kits, excluding anonymous kits. I want to say that I really have to say a big thank you to the Oregon State Police. We had some very vibrant discussions. The coalition was established, and policies and protocols came out of that coalition that I think have gotten us to a place where we're certainly ready to move this forward. And I think supporting the Senate bill is one piece to that that is going to help move this forward. As I take a look at what we've done with the Portland Police Bureau, along with a regional area through the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, we applied for the SACI grant, which would allow us, we actually received $1.1 million, I believe it was, maybe $1.3 million, to test untested safe kits, as well as to set up systems, put systems in place to avoid us ever being back in this position again. Part of that is also the DANI grant, the DA's New York grant out of Manhattan. That actual grant is going to pay for all of the testing. That's gone out for RFP, or they've put it out for responses. I believe they've actually now identified a vendor. We're going to start moving forward with taking all of our kits out of our inventory and submitting those to the vendor for testing. Obviously, this is going to have a huge impact on the Oregon State Police and their crime lab, because as we get results back, in order to get into the system, we are going to have to send it there. They're going to, all those results will have to be verified. So it has a significant impact on the state. Again, Superintendent Evans was, when we received a phone call from him saying starting January 1st of this year, we would be receiving all, we would be submitting all kits for testing. It was great news for us. It certainly moved this in the direction that we believed it needed to go into. It has had an impact on the state police, and it's had an impact in other areas of DNA testing, such as property crimes DNA. The other thing I'd like to talk about a little bit is that in our SACI grant, we were able to establish several new positions, all centered around advocacy. So in short, we have four advocates within the Detective Division of the Portland Police Bureau that their sole function is to work as advocates in sexual assault cases. We are taking this very seriously. We are moving this forward, and I think supporting the Senate bill is something that will help codify that and move it throughout the rest of the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle?
Yes. Good morning, Chair Przonski, members of the committee. My name is Michelle Roland-Schwartz. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. There is not much I can add to Ms. Tracy and the Bittler family's testimony today, other than to say that we are here in support of the bill. It signifies Oregon's long-term commitment to prevent future safe kit backlogs and encourages us to rethink our approach to sexual assault in the state. It also is an integral mechanism to restore survivors' trust and our system's response to sexual assault. As Ms. Tracy said, the exam itself takes hours of a sexual assault nurse examiner providing a thorough medical assessment and collecting evidence. Victims are often fearful and trepidatious of that process, and it takes an enormous amount of courage for them to disclose. And when they do disclose their assault, they put a lot of trust in our system. We must meet their courage to come forward with action, and I believe that Melissa's Law is one step that we can take to show our action. Melissa's Law is aligned with the Sexual Assault Task Force's ongoing efforts to inform Oregon's practices relating to the provision of medical forensic exams and the timely processing of safe kits, and is one piece of what we see as a large puzzle. I'm not going to go through all of those efforts, just in the interest of brevity, but we'll point out Kevin mentioned our survivor notification recommendations, which are informed by national practice and reflect our local conditions. The recommendations are an important reminder that we need to have a trauma-informed approach in how we re-engage victims, many of whom have felt forgotten. I will just end by saying I don't often have the liberty to share the Department of Justice support for this bill. I understand that they don't want to saturate the panel today, and so I want to reflect their full support of the bill and to thank you all for your ongoing work to address sexual assault in Oregon and for taking action by introducing Melissa's Law. And I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony in support of the bill, and I'm available for any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions at this point? I do want to just put on the record for Detective Burke, we will want to follow up on some of your testimony regarding using a private vendor My only concern is chain of custody as to how that will be worked out. Not that it can't be done. I did pick up the point where you said that it'd have to come back to the state police and then go through a verification. So I just want to make sure we don't have an unintended consequence. So with that, thank you very much. I'm going to move to the next panel unless
I can follow up later. I just want to make sure we have more discussion about immediate and uploading to CODIS. I see those more as policy questions than technical issues.
All right. Thank you very much. So we have five more individuals who are scheduled to testify. I'm going to call up the next panel, Danielle Tudor and Shannon Michael, I believe. If you two would come up, then we'll finish up with another panel of three. And for colleagues, I know that this is our first day. A lot of things are going on. We may have to go a little bit over 10 o'clock. If you have other obligations, please do not hesitate in taking care of those because we are just doing the public hearing today. Danielle?
Thank you, Chair Prozanski and members of the committee for letting me speak to you today. I won't say much. Most of you know who I am and that I obviously would be for this bill. I will say that I'm very honored to be invited by the Portland Police Bureau to be a member of their task force moving forward. So there will be victim representation in that task force as well.
Danielle? I need you to put your name on the record.
Yes, Danielle Tudor. Thank you. So, but definitely this is a great step forward and excited to see what's happening in our state because we are one of the first states. We're on the front edge of this. So a lot of the policy and how we handle this and what we put into effect can affect other states as well. So, and I would just agree with what someone else said earlier that it is a we situation. So it includes law enforcement and it also includes society. And I think even us as a society and how we've treated sexual assault and rape in the past kind of funnels into this as well. So you have all those pieces of the puzzle coming together and working together. And it's great to see and it's just great to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Senator Prozanski and the committee. My name is Shannon Michael, and I'm here today to show my support for Senate Bill 1571. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me the opportunity to speak on behalf of this legislation. Senate Bill 1571 is a bold move on behalf of both rape victims and law enforcement by establishing requirements to test all identifiable rape kits and establishing a required timeline for processing those kits. The state of Oregon, by doing this, is sending a message to victims. This message is that victims matter. This message is that the victim's lives matter. The sex assault crime the victim has just survived forever changes their life. The way their rape kit is handled also greatly affects their life, either for the good or for the bad. The way their rape kit is handled can make them feel either protected or victimized all over again. I am a rape survivor. On August 3rd, 1987, in Southeast Portland, I, along with two of my roommates, were violently raped. We were raped at knife point in our home by one rapist in the early morning hours. This was a stranger-on-stranger rape. As soon as our rapist left our home, we called for the police. The police arrived and drove us to Holiday Park Hospital, where we voluntarily made ourselves available to have individual rape kits prepared and processed, along with questioning by Portland police detectives. We were young, so very scared and uninformed of the criminal justice process. In addition to our rape kits being submitted as evidence, other items were taken for us as evidence as well. Things such as rings that had human hair in them, our clothing. Our case was never solved to our knowledge. We received very little communication from the Portland Police Department as to the status of our case, but granted, this was long before the days of emails or cell phones. After a couple of months, I contacted the evidence room regarding two items of mine that had been taken into evidence. I was told they could now be released to me. I drove to the department, signed for my evidence envelopes, and left. Outside the evidence building, I opened the envelope that contained my opal ring, one of the rings that had human hair caught in it. The assumption was that the evidence tech would be processing the hair for DNA. That's why they took it into evidence to begin with. When I took the ring out of the envelope, the hair was still caught in the ring. Nothing had ever been done. I was crushed. As a victim, I felt extremely let down. We have gone on with our lives, assuming nothing more has ever been done on our case because we've never heard anything further. In 2009, I was at a healthy place in my life. I requested to purchase copies of my police report related to the rape. I was informed that police reports were destroyed after 20 years. Therefore, my reports were gone. I felt crushed again. It now felt like my rape had been erased from history, though I still lived with the aftermath. In the last several months, I've been in contact with Portland Police again to inquire of the status of our rape kits. Were they ever processed? Through a lot of investigative digging, some information has been found, other information has been destroyed. Best educated guess at this point is that our rape kits most likely were destroyed without ever having been tested nor entered into CODIS. Senate Bill 1571 will be such a powerful tool that law enforcement will now have in their toolbox to use, and it will be a tool that victims can also count on. Through the implementation of Senate Bill 1571, victims will be more apt to come forward because they know their rape kit will be taken seriously, processed completely, all in a timely fashion. Justice for them will be sought with every means possible. I'd like to thank the committee again for allowing me to express my support for Senate Bill 1571 and for taking the issue of rape kit processing so seriously. For me and my two roommates, it's too late for justice. But I am hopeful as I see passage of Senate Bill 1571 empowering both police and future survivors. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, Shanna and to Danielle, thank you all very much for coming forward and again giving your personal stories in a public setting.
Thank you.
Our last panel that I have scheduled here that have signed up is Leanne Mead, Gail Meyer, and Jacqueline Swanson.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. In the interest of time, I'll keep my comments very, very brief. The Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association heartily supports the bill, and we thank the proponents for bringing it forward. In our view, there's no more serious allegation that can be made against an individual than rape, second to murder, and many could argue it's equal to murder. And it seems to us that all citizens of every component within the criminal justice system and the community at large has the right to expect the criminal justice system to kick into high gear with dispatch and with professionalism when the allegation is made. And I will save the bulk of my comments really for the Ways and Means, because it was just simply to point out that the analysts within the state crime lab have not been playing cribbage. We are downstream consumers of their work product, and they are very overpressed with burdens of pending cases. And there have been instances and examples, which I will not go into right now, but aggravated murder cases on hold for 10, 11 months, waiting for testing, where you have a full flotilla of defense teams and you have the prosecution over here, the individual in the local jail. They cannot move forward with the case, with investigation, with negotiations until the testing is done. So the state crime lab is underfunded, and we will be making more detailed comments and support for adequate funding down in Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me come for. Thank you, Chair Przanski, and the committee for allowing me to speak on behalf of Melissa's bill. My name is Leanne Mead, and I'm the founder and director of a nonprofit organization called Sparks of Hope. It's an organization geared towards child survivors of sexual abuse. We help them overcome the trauma they've experienced to help them heal, find their courage, and their voice. I'm here on behalf of the children I serve and the children of Oregon. When you think of sexual assault or a rape victim, or when you think of a rape kit, many people might agree you think older women or perhaps even younger women, college students. But I don't think the fact that children are also victims really crosses people's mind. The cold fact is that there are child victims. It is not yet known how many of those untested rape kits are from children, but I can assure you there are. It takes great courage to step up and report that you were sexually assaulted, violated, or raped, and it takes even more courage to go and have an invasive process done. So the rape kit collection exam as an adult is done, but as a child, it takes 10 times that amount of courage, because not only are you a child, but everything around you has more power than it would seem. The system is there to help even our most vulnerable children obtain justice, right? It's supposed to, but it falls way short. I know all too well about not receiving justice. I was sexually abused by my stepfather for over 12 years, from the age of 4 to 16. At 16 years old, he was pulled from my home. I was told to move on with my life. Everything would be better now. It wasn't. I didn't know that I could seek justice against the man who stole my innocence. No one ever told me I could seek the justice that he would go away to prison for many, many years for what he did to me. Not only was my innocence stolen, but so was my path to justice. And that is something I will always struggle with the rest of my life. So I get that lack of justice piece. The fact that there are children out there brave and courageous enough to go through this process, collecting the evidence, and to know that the evidence may just be sitting somewhere collecting dust is a travesty. Systems set in place that are supposed to protect them have let them down, let all of us down. There are predators out there getting away with sexual assault. So the time is now. The time is now to stand up for sexual assault victims, from children to adults. They have the courage to come forward to go through the examination for the rape kit collection. Then shouldn't the system afford them the justice to test their kits? They deserve nothing less. The time is now to make sure that happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Jacqueline?
Chairman Przanski and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to present my testimony to you here today. My name is Jacqueline Swanson. I'm an attorney licensed to practice in Oregon. I represent victims of crime and sexual assault survivors in particular. I don't want to take up too much of your time. However, I would like to say that physical evidence constitutes some of the most important evidence in determining whether or not a sexual assault crime has been committed. This is something that we've recognized for years. We've had DNA and forensic evidence testing available as a tool for law enforcement and investigatory procedures for decades now. And yet, despite this, hundreds of thousands of rape kits, estimated 500,000, sit in police and crime labs across the country untested. And we know of 5,000 here in Oregon. There are actors within the criminal justice system tend to cite to a lot of different systemic failures in accounting for the growing number of both backlogged kits and kits moving forward that remain untested. So in an effort to remedy this problem, there are a number of states that have also enacted reform similar to the reform that we're proposing here today. For example, there are actually 23 states that have passed, and this is not including pending legislation currently, reform requiring a statewide inventory and auditing of all sexual assault kits in the states, either one time, like on a yearly basis, or one time only, or on a yearly basis. In addition, a lot of other states have also passed laws regarding required testing, mandatory uploading into CODIS. In some cases, Pennsylvania, for example, and the reason I mention this is because of the question you directed to the detective earlier. In some cases, in Pennsylvania, they actually have written into their statutory code now that they're authorizing their Department of Justice, essentially, to designate certain private laboratories to receive evidence and test it. If there is a CODIS hit, or a DNA profile, rather, that's eligible to be entered into CODIS, then it goes back to the state crime lab. But there are mechanisms in place in a number of other jurisdictions that we can look to set the stage. I think moving forward, Oregon can have the best law possible. We can be a state that is great for sexual assault survivors, and this bill is but one step in that really incredibly important journey. And I thank you all so much for allowing us to come forward and speak about that today.
Thank you very much. And let's see, let me just, I guess, make one other comment on this. Leanne, for you, thank you very much for coming forward. Thank you for sharing your personal story as well as the work that you're doing. With that, I think that concludes everyone. I normally will ask, and I'm going to go ahead and ask now. We've had everyone that signed up on the witness registration sheet that wanted to testify. Was there anyone else that did not sign up that wanted to give testimony? All right, I've got two individuals. I'm not sure how long your testimony will be, But I'm here willing to stay for another 7 minutes before we have to go to our other obligations. Again, colleagues, I understand that you have other obligations, and if you need to leave, feel free to do so. Ladies, thank you very much. All right, for the two that signaled that they'd like to come forward, why don't you come on up, and we'll see if we can't get your testimony so you wouldn't have to come back at another time. We are going to have another time, but I think it will probably be for a work session only. But please come forward. Hi.
Hi, my name is Catherine Moore, Senator or Chair Przanski and members of the committee. And I'm just here as a survivor to ask that you push this bill forward in its current form. I'm really concerned about some of the amendments I heard discussed about pushing timelines. That is a huge concern for me, and I'd love to see some of those amendments in I guess, more detail. But I just wanted to come forward as a survivor and as somebody who's been through the process and did not receive justice and has had friends and family members who've done the same to please, please, we need this.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah, my name's Ben Kessler. Ben Kessler. I live here in Salem, and as of October 1st, we had 234 untested rape kits. As of October 2nd, we have 235. Our sister was attacked, and she has not gotten justice to this day. We know who did it. She had a kit tested, or not, she had a kit taken, but it has not been tested. It's been way too long. The guy who did it is moving freely, going to work, going to his home. You know, he's pressuring and intimidating people, and it's gone too far. And we thank you for pushing this bill through. It's way overdue, and the state-sanctioned rape culture needs to stop, and we thank you for trying to do that, because untested rape kits is state-sanctioned rape culture. And there are kids who have been raped in this city, and all the people are getting is probation violations. It is a very huge problem, and we thank you for pushing it through, but please stand strong and don't make any amendments. We need timelines. Lives are being ruined, and do we want it to be Melissa's law or Melissa's rebellion? Because we are tired of seeing our sisters struggle. We are the ones on the front lines because the system isn't helping them, and they come to us. And we protest, and we try to get the city, the police, to stop these people from attacking again. And in return, we are attacked. So we just thank you, and please don't make amendments. And that's it.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming forward, both of you, and telling your stories. So with that, I want to close our public hearing. But before doing so, what I want to make is a couple of statements. First, I wanted to thank one of our colleagues, Senator Elizabeth Snyder Hayward. She was the individual that actually brought the legislation forward in 2015, requesting that we go through this process to identify and do the inventory on the rape kits. I also want to thank the Superintendent Evans from the State Police, who was willing to step up and actually do the work. We did not do it through legislation. We did do it through a work group, and that is what we have communicated to us today. And again, for Senator Gelser for bringing this forward. The plan at this point is that there will be some discussions as to what is necessary, if anything, regarding suggestions for some amendments. I understand there are some that are technical, others that may be considered policy, but we will put something together. And my, I guess, commitment to this process is what we had before, and I know that everyone on this panel is the same. We will be moving legislation through. What we want to make certain is that we don't have a scenario that actually forces it down into ways and means, and where it could actually may not see a passage because of the fiscal cost. I'm just not sure. We want to make certain we get the policies in and that we advocate for the funding that's necessary. What I don't want to see is this bill not make it through this process this time, and then we can fortify for more resources in the future if that's what we need to do. So with that, any other comments? All right. Thank you all very much. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1571. And I believe that takes care of our work for today. So we are closed for the day. And I believe we're scheduled to be here at 8 o'clock. 8:30 tomorrow. Is that right? 8:30?
You are so nice.
All right. 8:30. We're adjourned.
My favorite. You are so nice.
All right. 8:30. We're adjourned.